Hey, listeners, did you know that Yogi Triathlete offers endurance coaching for body and mind? We offer personalized training plans for endurance sports, wellness and mindset, nutrition and recovery guidance, and race preparation and strategy, all within the supportive community of Team Yogi Triathlete. So if you're ready to conquer your fitness goals and push your limits, our endurance coaches are ready to guide you on the journey to peak performance. Go to yogitriathlete.com today to set up your free 30-minute discovery call and embrace a future of strength, stamina, and achievement. Your goals, our experience, the perfect match for unstoppable success.
A lot of my evolution as, I think, an athlete mirrored my life journey. I was really driven for a while by the fact that I was alone and independent. I had struggled through some difficult things and sort of broke free eventually from some difficult situations and used that to motivate me. And I find myself years later still like loving ultra running and mountain running and adventure, but in such a better place in my life. And I think there's been a part of me for a little while now that has wondered, like, do I still have that edge? Have I still got it? Like, these things that were my motivation for finishing a really hard race. And I think that kind of is what drove me to set a big goal for this year, to just prove that to myself. But now every race and every adventure that I go out on, there's more meaning behind it. I put more thought behind it because I'm not just driven blindly by like, oh, I'm running from someone or escaping something or trying to prove myself. There's a purpose to this, or it's meaningful in some way. And this is why I want to do this.
Welcome to the Yogi Triathlete Podcast. We are your hosts, Jess and BJ, and today we're taking it wild with mountain runner Emily Ketty. Emily is the queen of over 20 FKTs, the most recent being just last week, and one that went down far from plan. She is an ultra runner who never saw her life going in this direction until it did, and now she's en route to realizing her goal of climbing 2 million vertical feet in 2024. She is a disagreeable person, and I'm not sure we could love that anymore. Not because of what may seem to be a negative connotation, but for its actual true essence. She says she is leading with her heart more than ever this year and has learned more than once along the way that sustainable love for and belief in oneself do not come from outward achievement, and that imposter syndrome is something we all experience. Before we dive in, we must give a shout out to YTP guest Jason Hardrath for bringing Emily to us for this conversation. Both BJ and I quickly adopted his enthusiasm for her role in this world within the first few moments of our research for this episode. So thank you, Jason. 50Ks, 100s, 200s, and beyond, Emily Ketty has a library of experience that lives within her heart, muscles, and mind. And we are grateful for her being here with us so we can unlock the door and let her wisdom flow freely to all of you. Emily, thank you and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. That is, again, the best intro ever.
Because she made me read it twice. No, we had a little mishap. We had to redo it, but yeah, she's good at receiving the love. So yeah, love that. It's a good way to kick it off.
All right. Well, let's talk about this plan that didn't go to plan. Let's talk about this most recent adventure. Like, so what was the plan, and then how did it all like not come to plan?
Yeah. I mean, this, so the Lost Coast Trail, is a place that I've been going to at least once a year for the past, several years for backpacking, usually backpacking, but, and camping, but just, a little bit of running too. I had set an FKT on the southern portion back in 2021. And I have, you know, the weather app on my phone. Do you ever just kind of scroll through and see like, oh, where's it going to be nice this weekend? I kind of want to get away. I'm always checking the weather down there and the tide schedule, just so I can think ahead, like, oh, next month or in a couple months, what's it gonna be like? Is there a nice window where the tides are gonna line up really nicely for hiking? And I had just noticed that when we were gonna be down in California for my partner's kids' spring break, there was a window of really nice weather and really nice tides to allow for long days of hiking. So I just had it in the back of my head. I want to give this big FKT a go. And so nobody had done, there's like a northern and a southern section of the trail. So people have done just the north, just the south, north and south, but nobody had done a full out and back, which is about 113 miles total. So I thought I would give it a go. And I basically did all the preparation, did some tapering, got all situated. It's super remote and rugged. So the way that you know, part of the planning is just getting there. And I was going to do a I was going to go for two FKTs, one kind of on the way out, so like 50-ish miles, and then the full out and back. So kind of two birds, one stone. And I was going to do the first one unsupported and then the full effort. I was going to do the first one unsupported, yes, and the full effort self-supported. So I was going to stash some things at one end, but I couldn't even drive the road to get in there. So I had to pivot like before the thing even began, and I decided just to do the whole thing unsupported. So like without anybody there with me and having to carry everything for, up to 36 hours at 113 miles. Just that became the only option really. So I did that, started the next morning and got about 30 miles in and, the start of the southern section of the trail. And there was a sign that part of it was closed, just winter 2023 storm damage. The southern section is really, really rough. It's so rugged and hard to access that trail maintenance is rarely done. And it's also where the northern section spends a lot of the time right on the ocean, which is why you have to be careful about the tides, or on bluffs right nearby. The southern part kind of goes up into the mountains quite a bit more, and there's a lot more of elevation change, and it's really kind of on cliffs next to the ocean and really steep angled hillsides. So washouts and landslides happen all the time there, and it's also really overgrown with like poison oak and pampas grass and stinging nettles, really lovely things. So anyway, so I get to the southern section. I see that it's closed, and I don't know if that's an official closure or how old the sign is, but I go to about a mile further is the only part of the trail that you can get cell phone service. I had my InReach with me so that I could, message people as needed, but it's not very quick. So I went up higher, so I could get service and made some phone calls. None of my research before I went down there had indicated that it was closed, but that's kind of how it goes down there. There's not much available online. You really have to dig to find out anything. So I made the decision at that point that, it wouldn't count as an FKT if I went through a closure. And it would also be really dangerous because even though I had an InReach, if something happened to me and I was on a trail where I was navigating through like landslides or off trail because there were washouts. Even the access roads to get down there were closed themselves. There were downed trees and slides on some of those trails. So it would have made rescuing me monumentally more difficult. And so, the best choice was just to turn around. So I thought about, I was really bummed. I was only 30 miles in. I called my friend Ashley and she said, "You made really good time in the northern section. Better than I thought," because then I pull up my phone and I look it up and it turned out that I got the FKT just for that. And I hadn't been trying to, because you don't really go for an FKT of something that's like, 25 miles when you're going for something much longer. So that was really a silver lining. I was glad for that. It was by like 4 minutes, so it was really close. And I had so much weight in my running vest. I mean, 7,000 calories, tons of gear, extra batteries, you know, layers. So I was really glad. That was a good sign. So I was trying to make the decision of whether to take a shuttle the next morning back to my car. And I just wasn't, I felt like I had made all the arrangements to get down there, and I didn't want it to end so abruptly. So I just ran the 30 miles back to my car. And even though there was a high tide, it was still low enough to pass through in the evening. And I got to experience the Lost Coast at night in the dark, and probably make a lot of backpackers really confused because you don't see runners down there.
With all that planning, preparation, and actually getting yourself immersed in that experience, having to be flexible, having to detach from the outcome, what is your relationship with being able to just flow with it and also being able to like get an FKT by surprise, like be willing to like, oh my God, this is so cool.
Yeah. I like to try to do things sometimes that force me to be more flexible, and also things that that force me to get a little uncomfortable. When I say like I like to do that, I mean I think it's good for me because I'm not probably the most flexible person in the world. When things go wrong, I get anxious, and I just really, as a human developing and trying to be better, putting myself in situations where I would have to adapt is something I just think is good for me. And it always ends up being a worthwhile experience. So, right off the get-go, before the effort even started, I had to make a bunch of changes and repack everything and kind of rethink about the whole effort of like, now I'm carrying a lot more weight. I'm going to be moving more slowly. That was the big thing. And part of the reason I was so excited to get the FKT that I did, because if I was just running 25 miles, I would have carried very little. The good news is that route can for sure go a lot faster. It was definitely exciting. And just, you know, when you're running in a special place or you're going for a record that's meaningful, I mean, the Lost Coast is, it is peaceful and meditative and bucolic and just a wonderful place for backpacking, not a wonderful place for running. Like you're running on deep sand and gravel and boulders. And, it's kind of silly to run there, but, at the same time, it makes, you know, being able to put your name on a record just that much more special. And any time spent there is good time. Every time I passed a group of backpackers, I felt like, I wish I was with you guys. I wish I was doing that. But I know it's a place I'll go back to many times.
I think that's, you know, part of being driven, part of you have to have this strong drive to even attempt, you know, the things that you've attempted. And it's like every time I turned a page and did listen to some podcasts you've been on or looked at your Instagram, it was just, there's so much under your belt already, right? And so you have to have this drive that says, all right, here's the plan, here's the goal, like I'm all in, here's the focus. But then I think such a big part of what can make us such great athletes is this ability to pivot, to let go, to detach about how it unfolds. And Mother Nature is going to be the greatest teacher in that, because she's going to win every time. There's no negotiating with her. You know, it is what it is. If her trail is closed because she experienced, you know, damage over the winter, she doesn't want you on it. You're not going to be on it. And so Do you agree with that? Like that this part of this, it's almost like a softening, right? Like a surrender can be a missing piece for someone, whether they're an athlete or not, who's really driven to achieve in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, exactly. What you can do, what you can achieve is always, you know, determined by the forces that are out there and the weather and the situation. And I think being able to roll with the punches in that respect is really, really important. But when you, like, you talk about, you mentioned drive, and this is something I haven't even, like, written about yet, just because I wasn't sure how to go about sharing the topic. But like, a lot of my evolution as, I think, an athlete was, you know, it kind of mirrored my life journey. I was really driven for a while by the fact that I was alone and independent. I had struggled through some difficult things and sort of, like, you know, broke free eventually from some difficult situations and used that to motivate me. And I find myself years later still like loving ultra running and mountain running and adventure. But in such a better place in my life. And I think there's been a part of me for a little while now that has wondered, like, do I still have that edge? Have I still got it? Like, these things that were my motivation for finishing a really hard race. And I think that kind of is what drove me to, well, like, set a big goal for this year, to just prove that to myself. But now every race and every adventure that I go out on is, there's more meaning behind it. I put more thought behind it because I'm not just driven blindly by, like, you know, oh, I'm running from someone or escaping something or trying to prove myself. It's, there's a purpose to this, or it's meaningful in some way. And this is why I want to do this, if that makes sense.
I love that. And it sounds to me what you're describing is an evolution. Like, you're evolving as an athlete, you're evolving as a human, you're healing. Like, say, like, ooh, do I still have that thing that drove me? You may have outgrown that. And that drive that I was picking up, at least through my own recognition of what you were saying, this drive of years ago, my experience has been that drive can bring you to a place where you're like, I have to do it all on my own, where you're not letting maybe in support or asking for help. It's like this driven through this independence can actually be a little bit isolating. And through this evolution that it sounds to me like you're evolving as an athlete, where there's more in the drivetrain, and it might look different and it might feel a little different, but it's just the fuel for it all is a little more expansive.
Yeah, definitely. I, you know, and for a long time, it was, you know, longer and longer distance races or harder and harder efforts, even just like stacking up FKTs and everything felt new. It's not quite that anymore. I'm still trying to, I think, define, that is my current struggle, defining myself as an athlete and figuring out how to justify all the time that I spend training as an elite athlete without it, you know, paying the bills. it's tough. You know, I don't necessarily, money's not my highest commodity. I think time is, but to an extent, you still need to justify how you contribute, you know, to the greater society and how you spend your time, and still have to pay bills. So I've been spending a lot of time trying to figure that out, but I still love just the way that certain adventures fit into your life like a puzzle and making them happen and what it does to you I mean, the best part is, you know, in the moment, it's hard to reflect. Most of the meaning comes afterwards when you're talking about it, thinking about it, writing it, about it. I love that process.
Yeah. And if you are not following Emily in the Wild on Instagram, do it, because she's a beautiful writer and has really, really meaningful shares. And then, of course, super exciting things like when you launch your goals out into the world and all of that. So definitely give her a follow over there and have some, make a cup of tea or pour a glass of wine, which I know you're a fan of. And and enjoy her writings because they're beautiful. So here you are, like, big evolution, like even within this time in your life since you became an athlete. But I heard you say, like, I never saw my life going in this direction. So what direction was it going in before? Like, how, what was the turning point that got you started in this?
Yeah. I went through grad school in my 20s. I got my PhD when I was 27, and I had gotten married. I had a house. It was kind of like all the bricks were stacking up. I used to love shopping. I used to be at the mall all the time. And then ultimately that was just, I feel like I knew it deep down. There's a lot that happened, but like deep down that was just not where I wanted to go. I felt very rushed. I felt like I wasn't ready to have kids. There was so much I wanted to do. And so a lot of those things, I take responsibility. I kind of threw my life up into a fan and the pieces just went all over the place. For better, for worse. Kind of a hard time, but also just a huge turning point. I ended up hiking the PCT in 2016. That, I tell everyone, it ruins your life in the best way because it's such an eye-opening experience. Fell in love with being outside, wanted to essentially mirror that, you know, back in real life as much as I could. It turns out that ultra running and training for ultras is a great way to be outside all the time and still be able to have a job. So, I had a friend who recommended that I do a race, and it just kind of slid from there into more time outside, more races, and yeah.
So when does the really long distance stuff come into your awareness? Like, when does it be like, oh my God, like I can run 100 miles or I can even go 200 miles?
Well, my first race, the longest race I had done was maybe 6 or 10 miles. I think like a Tough Mudder, but I had a friend recommend a 50K. And so I did that and it was okay. And then my next race was a 50 miler. And I followed a very rudimentary training plan from Google and I was very anxious about the race, had no idea how I was going to do. A couple other friends were running it. And I ended up doing really well. And they were kind of like, Emily, like, what in the world? Like, where did this come from? It was so lovely to feel like I played sports in high school. It was for social reasons. I wasn't a star. I didn't shine. I dropped out of track and field because I wasn't disciplined enough. So to find running at that point and feel like it was something I could be good at, like athletic, was a huge deal for me. It meant a lot. It felt like there was a door opening to a whole nother world, where I could be good at something like that. So I remember I came back to work and my boss gave me a bottle of wine and congratulations. He stopped giving me bottles of wine shortly after because I did that distance and then I signed up for 100 miler. And then every year since, for like the past 6 years, it's been like, pretty much I overschedule myself and end up not doing a few races, but, it's been what am I capable of? And it just got to be longer and longer distances. And can I do 100 miles? And everyone in my life was just dumbfounded. And then 200 miles. And it was just a personal challenge of like, what can my body do? What am I capable of? And then during that, it was also like my friends are there supporting me. So I've got this amazing network and crew, and I'm making friends along the way and immersing myself in the whole ultra running community and just finding that this is my place. These are my people.
I love that curiosity of like, what am I capable of? And that's a beautiful curiosity, you know, part of the drive, right? Like that, where are my limits? You know, what can I get past? One of the things I love about trail running is many times you're in a place where you're the only one that's going to get yourself out, you know, like you have to get yourself out. But through that curiosity, now you're performing and you're doing well. And is there now pressure of, you know, I have to do well? Did it ever turn? Well, I know like where I'm getting to is the kind of this imposter syndrome, right? That voice in our head that I really want to address because we all have it. And the part of us that says, well, when I do this, then I will be this or legit. Or so, it sounds like it started with the, I guess we would say like the beginner's mind, right? Like, oh, this is so fun and curious and I'm meeting all these great people and what a great community. But then inevitably, you know, that bad wolf will show up and try and take control of the party and make it much more serious than it needs to be.
Yeah. I fight the bad wolf. I want to say every day. I mean, and I wish it wasn't that, I wish it wasn't the case. And maybe that's just, I should honor that that's where I am at this point. But I feel all the time like, what am I doing? I should be working harder or faster or, you know, I used to think, you know, there'd be all these ambassadorships for all different companies and companies would take a ton of people on. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And then it was being on a team for a company and getting to represent them. And then it was, okay, I will know I've made it when I get free shoes. And then I got free shoes and free gear and, which was amazing. And still like, I mean, there's no money in ultra running really. And nobody just cares that much. You have to love it to do it and to spend a ton of time doing it. But it does feel like I've been wrestling with this, you know, what does it take to be a professional? Could I ever do that? Could I be elite? Am I too old? Am I not fast enough? Do I not, you know, put together enough Instagram videos? I hate that. I hate TikToks and having to do that. And there's athletes who are so good at that and they have companies, you know, supporting them. And that's amazing. It's just not me. So trying to figure out, should I be spending the time trying to sell myself or trying to get a sponsor. It's a lot. And then thinking, am I even good enough? And looking around and saying, I can look around and name a bunch of people right here in my community who are faster, who I think are stronger, who are just as deserving. Yeah, that's hard. It's hard to kind of stand there and say, no, I'm going to go for this, or I think I deserve this. I'm going to ask for money or, you know, gosh, that's intimidating. And once you're in the world of ultras, you know, to most of the population, what I'm doing is absolutely insane and just incredible. But once you're in this world of athletes, there's incredible people all around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be normalized, right? Like what you're doing can be normalized. And I appreciate you sharing that because that little wolf, it's relentless and it's honestly, it's not going anywhere. It's how much are we going to pay attention to it? How much of our vital life force are we going to give to it? Which kind of leads me into this like idea of you being disagreeable, which I loved that post because it's like fear, doubt, you know, negative thoughts about yourself or your abilities or comparison energy, all of that. but you keep moving forward anyway. Mm-hmm. Like you keep going anyway. So tell us a little bit about that being disagreeable and why it's so amazing to be that way.
I was talking with my partner. We were just having a conversation about personalities and who we are. He had just made a comment about how I seemed so relaxed and calm. And I jokingly told him it's because all the activity is sedating me. But I have a high frequency and I can be like quite anxious. But I think because I've been doing so much activity this year, just in my like overall yearly project, that I've really, my body and my brain has started to just slow down and take things one day at a time and learn to be more adaptable and more flexible, and just take things as they come. But he was describing me, we were just having a conversation, to each other. Oh, 'cause he's reading this book called Humankind. Like philosophical book. He's very like stoic and philosophical himself. And he said that I was disagreeable, and I was immediately offended because I felt like that's awful. Like isn't that someone who just argues all the time and someone that you don't want to be around? And he saw how upset I got and was like, no, that's not what I mean. And he would never say anything like offensive if I knew that there was more behind it. There was a reason he chose that word. And so he Googled it and showed it to me. And really the meaning is just people who, disagreeable people are often more successful because it's like they refuse to take no for an answer. If they want to make something happen for themselves, they're going to do it. They're going to work and they're going to be just like better words that I think of, like, persevering and relentless. I love the word relentless. Keep going. That is something that I can do, that I can be. And just, you know, strong in the face of adversity. That's so that kind of disagreeable. I'm not just going to be, when I think about the opposite, agreeable, I don't really want to just be an agreeable person. I don't want to be someone who just kind of lets everything go and goes with the flow and never stands up for myself. Or, you know, I do get motivated by the notion of like proving everyone wrong or proving myself wrong or proving self-doubt wrong, or proving society wrong, like about the things that girls can do. So disagreeable. I feel like those are the women who shake things up and who make things happen and who make change.
Oh, that's so well said. I think I was channeling relentless when you were coming, thinking of a better word than disagreeable. Cause I'm like, yeah, relentless. Like you don't succumb or hand yourself over to what everybody believes to be true and believes to be in the box. Like you're such an age, you're this and that. And so you should only be here. Like there's a power and, a belief, let's say that you're the one, like you're the one in your own little area that can supersede all of this stuff. And so myself, I'll talk about myself too. Like I feel that thread and I pull upon that because I just don't want to be the status quo. I don't want to be, we get one chance. And you actually talked about this as one of your philosophies, like don't wait and put things off. Like we only get one shot. So we got to keep coming back to, this is our shot today and then tomorrow and then the next day and the next day. And was that part of how you formulated this 2 million feet of elevation that you're going after? Is this like, like I got to do this now?
I think so. It kind of fit in the, you know, just in the place that I am in my life right now. I mean, when's a good time in your life to do that much vert every day? I had some conversation with my partner about it too, just like, hey, this is going to be really time consuming. And I didn't want like relationships to suffer. I didn't want friends to not be inviting me on a run because there wasn't enough vertical gain. And they were like, oh, she won't want to do that. And I wanted to find some balance. It's not just, this is my singular goal for the year. I want it to be kind of a mixture of lots of activities and lots of adventures and many different things, along with the discipline to to stay on track, to do like the boring hill repeats or the occasional Stairmaster at the gym, just because that's all I have time for, or that's how I'm going to get it done today. I try to keep that to such a minimum, but, I think that the 2 million goal, the way it came about, was kind of over the course of a month or so, like in January. I didn't set it at the beginning of the year. It was kind of a thing that, was developed throughout that first month. And then in February, I was like, okay, I think this is going to be it. But I needed a project that was going to be big, that was going to be sort of the backdrop for a lot of learning and letting myself evolve, because I've been feeling a little bit stuck in the who am I and what kind of athlete am I. I wanted something big and difficult, that seemed outlandish, but that there was that glimmer of achievability to it, that it's like, I think I can do that. It's like running your first 200 miler. You don't know if it's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to be able to finish it, but you think maybe you can, because others have. And that was kind of the thing. I knew I wasn't going to be the first person to do 2 million. I knew it was not very common. But I thought, wow, if I can do this, it just, it would shake things up for me.
I'd say, do you have like data on the most that you've done in a year so far?
The most I've done was maybe like under 600,000, which actually today after this morning, I'm at 606,000 for the year. So I've never done like a million.
You're doing pretty good.
I kind of had an idea what it would take, like what the amount per day. It's just under 5,500 feet a day on average. So I can kind of think about like different mountain climbs around here that would add up to that. I've never dedicated that much time to something either.
You have stairs in your house?
No. Part of it is really, I mean, I also really just wanted it to be about finding balance and finding a way to do, to manage my time really well, to have it include a lot of good adventures, but also to still go to like the kids' soccer games and cook dinner and take my dog for walks with my partner and read books. I didn't want it to take over my life. I wanted to prove to myself that, that I could balance it all.
Well, that's the power. That's the power, right? It's like going after these big things, but not be all consuming, but still, you know, have the relentless drive to go after it, but not sacrifice things in your everyday life, still work and have your wine and make some money somewhere. Kind of like put that whole stew together to kind of create this amazing experience. And you're probably going to walk away in December on your last, you know, couple feet. And you're going to be like, I had no idea, but now you've got experience. Now you've got a plan. Or a plan to move forward. If you want to go 4 million, or if somebody comes to you and says, I want to do 2 million, you kind of have like this framework for it, but you don't have it until you go immerse yourself in that experience.
Exactly. And I like that too, that, you know, I think that, again, like one of the crazy things, especially about social media these days, is you really don't know what people think of you. And I try not to get sucked into like dwelling on that too much. Especially because I tend to share a lot and I don't want to worry about that. And I've had so many meaningful conversations with people just on, you know, different topics that I've written about, but, I want to believe that I'm a normal person. I mean, I don't have a company paying me for travel and giving me an income so that I can just do nothing but lay around and vert all, you know, or lay around and vert, but you know, that's not have to do. I'm making it work with the resources I have. It would of course be so lovely to be paid, but, still want to be relatable. And so I want it to be something that feels achievable, even if it's not 2 million a year for someone, just another big goal, but just keeping at it. I also think there's been other things in my life that I've started and quit or not been consistent at. And this, and making this a known goal that I publicly said I was going to do this and it's big, it really forces me to recommit to it every single day and think about, you know, not just that I've made my intentions known, but my personal reasons for doing it, what I'm getting out of it, why it's valuable to me, why I think it's important, and so why I'm still going to go out and do it tomorrow, the next day.
So you live up in Bend, Oregon, correct? Now, do you have a go-to there, which is just like, okay, I got to go out and I'm going to go do this one. Like, what's your go-to?
I have a couple. There's a couple of local buttes, like our little hills, but they're like under 1,000 feet of climbing. So there's a lot of repeats. I do part of my 2 million. So it's any like human powered, foot powered. Like I can be on a mountain bike. I can be uphill skiing. So I do a lot of the uphill skiing. So Mount Bachelor's our ski resort. They have a great uphill policy. So like yesterday I did 10,000 feet there and got to go up to the summit a couple times, and the eclipse was happening, and which wasn't, it was pretty cloudy, but yeah. So the skiing is definitely a lot. Right now our bigger mountains where I could get like, you know, 5,000 feet in a climb are inaccessible with the snow, unless you're on skis. But just, you know, the mountain roads are closed. So, I've had to be kind of creative, and I'm also lucky enough that I can, travel a bit. And so I've been down in California a few times and, you know, running around their hills there, but a lot of hill repeats, honestly, and just getting it done. The whole reason for the 2 million was really, I have a big race coming up in September, and I wanted to be like as prepared for that as possible. And so I knew I was going to try to like have some kind of plan for the year to get, especially my legs, really, really strong, because there's a ton of climbing in that race. But that was sort of, that's not why I'm doing 2 million. I wouldn't say that that's the training plan for a 200 miler at all. But, that was kind of what I was thinking of. So just, yeah, preparing to run up and down hills.
Is that the Swiss Peaks 360K?
Yeah.
But you're not just doing that. Like 12 days later, you're doing another race. Tell us about that, because that's some good vert. You're going to collect some vert in those 12 days.
Right. Absolutely. So my best friend was going to, I actually originally wanted to do the Tour de Gens, which is in Italy. It's a 200 miler, and there's a lottery, for that race. And so the Swiss Peaks was kind of, if I didn't get into the lottery, for Tour de Gens, and I didn't get in. So I just pivoted, signed up for Swiss Peaks. It was a week earlier. My best friend was going to crew me for the first one, but then we found that, the same race organization that does Tour de Gens was having a brand new race, a 100K distance this year. And she's an ultra runner too. So he said, let's just both do that. So that'll be like 5 or 6 days after the 200, and I will probably be walking a lot of it. So we're going to have a trip to Switzerland and Italy in the fall.
And the 200 has over 80,000 feet of climbing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just for reference, like the hardest 200 I've run had half of that. And one of the harder, like 100 milers in the US is the, I say it wrong every time. Ouray? Is it Ouray?
Ouray. I think it's just the intonation.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Of how you say it. Ouray. Someone's probably listening to this going, no, you guys have it totally wrong, but yeah. It doesn't matter. We're talking about the same race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that one, so that's kind of been on my wish list for a while, but that one is, so it's 100 miles with 40,000 feet. And so the one in Switzerland is essentially just double that, which is utter insanity and terrifying.
And exciting.
But then the 100K. So the Swiss Peaks goes from Matterhorn to Lake Geneva. So this sounds amazing. And then the 100K is Matterhorn to Mont Blanc.
Yeah.
Like, which is also no joke for 100K. Right. So what is the vert on that?
To be honest, I don't know. I feel like I'm putting that out of my head.
Okay.
I will say that I've recovered. I mean, I've run 3 200s before. I've recovered very well from each one. Mental recovery kind of being the part that I think has varied the most, but physically pretty well. And I think that's just because a 200 miler is a very different pace than anything shorter than that. And you're doing a lot of hiking. And if you've conditioned your body to both run and hike, then you'll be more successful. So, I just have blind optimism that I will be able to eat pasta and rehydrate and drink wine for 5 days and then go out for another race.
I think
there's the recovery protocol.
Sounds like a plan that you should be very optimistic about. Yeah.
There's a really generous cutoff. And also by running this race, there's a chance I can bypass the lottery for the Tour de France next year. So that's also part of the motivation. I mean, I could practically walk the whole thing and still finish within the time limit. So we'll just kind of see what I can do.
Sounds amazing.
I'm curious about in these 200 races specifically, like the sleep deprivation, or how would someone would prepare for that? Like, do you do anything in your training? Do you set yourself up for overnights and then take a nap, and or do you just hand yourself over on race day and do the best you can? Maybe that was the first one, but
more along those lines. So there's really not research that shows that like training sleep deprivation is useful. It's really not good for you. That's probably the least healthy part of 200s is just the sleep deprivation. But I think the more of them you do, the more you learn like what your body needs and what your body does to signal what it needs during the race. Because I think, you know, first having a sleeping plan is really good. Like, when I get to this aid station that has, you know, a sleeping tent, I want to sleep for an hour and a half. Well, you may not be tired when you get to that aid station in the race. And so you might decide to continue. And then you need a dirt nap at some point, and like your little emergency bivy. I think you come up with a plan and then you stay really, really flexible. And when your body tells you you need sleep, sometimes you just need like a 10 minute cat nap and then you stand up from the ground feeling super refreshed. Sometimes you take a cat nap and it's like, I think I need another 10 minutes or I need an hour, at an actual rest station. So just kind of really listening to what the body needs, but learning that, sometimes it's very little in order to keep going.
Yeah. We had Jesse Haynes on who did the Moab 240 and he was saying the sleep pods, like your goal is to get there, but he was figuring out once he got there, there was just too much noise. There was just too much activity because they were close to the checkpoint. So he had to like go further down the road or find another spot.
Yeah. That was my first 200. I love Moab's great. I think that has been true. And, I think like learning not to fight it too. I would find myself practically walking sideways in the dark, and I would find that the colder it got, I would get sleepier, which is, I think, usually the opposite, but, just not fighting it and just recognizing, that at my last 200, I think I did the best job so far of, telling whoever's with me, okay, I need a nap now. I'm going to just drop to the ground, set my alarm 10 minutes, and then we go. instead of trying to kind of stumble along for a couple more miles and really suffering because of it. Yeah.
It's interesting that like you really, you're not, it's not like heat training where you're kind of training yourself to adapt to heat. Like you're not training yourself for sleep deprivation, because it sounds to me like in your perspective, it can actually hurt you along the way. Like it can hurt your training along the way and your ability to prepare, but that experience, but basically like don't do a one and done with the 200, because every experience is helping you understand what you need, you know, in general. Of course, it's always in the moment, but how you respond, your unique body and mind respond to that sleep deprivation. And like, it's not always, you know, the right thing to just kind of keep pushing through. Like you said, you'd find yourself like walking sideways, like I'll just go a little bit more. But yeah, to kind of, to learn that, right? Like experience is everything. Experience is, turns into wisdom on the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, unless you're one and done with a 200 and you're like, okay, did that. That's, I don't need to do that anymore. I think it's really cool how much changes from one to the next. I actually have video. My best friend, starting with the first 200, she videoed me on her phone like a mile or two from the finish line. And she was like, would you ever do this again? And I just looked at the camera and I was like, what? Again? No. And then the next day I signed up for another one. Like how quickly the pain, the memory of everything, you know, passes and you're looking forward to the next one. And that's another one of those things of like, is it ultra running, like in the moment, is it fun? I don't know. I feel like usually no. It's really the satisfaction afterwards and that feeling of like, oh my God, I did that. And I saw all these things and met all these amazing people and had all these just very meaningful conversations and incredible memories. And I want more of that. Well, you have to suffer if you want more of that.
Mm-hmm. Can you maybe quantify like what you believe in your experience has been, what percentage has been the physical training and what percentage has been like the mental fortitude to keep going in these races? Like, where's that balance in your experience?
A 200 miler, I think, is definitely something like half and half. I mean, maybe even a little bit more mental. You really have to want it. I think that's part of what I'm curious most in general about athletic pursuits is like the point where you expect that your body would give up or stop. Like I'm always imagining that my leg's just going to snap in half or my tendon is going to break, or you know, at some point that like my body's just gonna halt moving, and it doesn't. I mean, nothing that magical has happened yet. Where like I just have this image of my mind that at some point I'm going to be absolutely halted, and that doesn't happen. You, I mean, barring injury, really your brain is telling you what to do. It is so mental to keep going, to reach the point where you think you've absolutely hit your max and then go beyond that. I think that is part of what's so exciting about endurance endeavors, is getting past that and truly being able to say, I don't know what my limits are. and to be exploring that.
And I'm thinking, you're building the mental fortitude by doing the work, by doing the hill workouts and the training sessions. But is there another way to, is there another, any other thing that you're doing to kind of strengthen that mental muscle, or is it through the training?
A lot of it's through the training. When I'm just bored or I'm doing repeats and I just say, there'll be more days that are more exciting, that I have beautiful routes, that I get to run on, you know, much more scenic trails, but, you know, just the mental discipline and just sticking to it. I personally experience during just about every race, at least one moment or long moments of, I want to quit. I want to drop, to the point where if I have crew with me, they really have to like talk me off the ledge and convince me to keep going. And a lot of times that just means like a nap or eating some food or something like that. But I have got the wanna quits really bad in a lot of races. The last one that I can think, I was not even in it from the beginning. Just mentally, I was feeling off. And then I took a really hard fall 7 miles in and hurt my knee pretty badly. And I kept in the race. I wanted to drop so badly, but because I was worried that it was like a lapse in mental strength, I kept going until mile 80 and my knee was really jacked up. I just didn't want to use that excuse like, oh, my knee's injured, I have to drop. Turned out I probably should have dropped a lot earlier, but that's a weakness of mine, is like things can start to be really difficult and really scary and I want to quit. And so part of the reason I keep doing these things is also just to prove to myself that I'm not going to quit, that I'm going to keep going. And that's why efforts like the Lost Coast or like races where you don't have a crew or you're unsupported, it takes a lot more to do those, because there's nobody nudging you along. It's all you, and you have to want it. And you have to get through the times when you'll either forget about the reasons for being there or kind of justify them away and tell yourself that they don't really matter. You have to keep going despite that, which is hard.
Yeah. So as we kind of wrap things up here, I would love for you to speak to women who are pursuing, you know, goals on the trail, maybe self-supported or solo missions on the trail, or perhaps the women who would like to, but have a bit of hesitation of being on the trail by themselves. So can you just riff on that a little bit, what you would like to offer them?
Absolutely. I think that is one thing that stuck with me always, that's driven me, is because I'm a girl, because I'm a woman, like I won't let that be a factor. That will in fact be the chip on my shoulder that'll make me keep going. If I can be the first to do something, male or female, that is so meaningful to me, because to be able to like just be the example in being a woman, and kind of paving that way and not having to follow in the footsteps of a man, it's super cool. I think, you know, I've never felt hesitant about going out by myself. I mean, I've been nervous about like mountain lions and things. I get really nervous about that. But I don't want that to hold me back. I think as far as women getting into trail running, one of the things I keep telling myself when I feel like, does this mean anything? And am I any good? And does it matter? It does. If it matters to you, then it for sure matters. But there is so much space in the mountain sports and running sports, and I mean, probably all sports, but there's so much space in the community for women. So there's really no need for like wondering if you're not as good as someone else, or wondering if what you're doing is matters if you're fast enough or strong enough. We just need more women out there, and just making it feel like it's possible and doable. And I just see myself as another woman. If I make one other person think that they could maybe do that too, then mission accomplished, because that's what it's been like for me. There are so many women who stand out in my mind that I've seen do things, and that's just immediately like lit a fire in me and inspired me to want to be like that, or want to try that, or be that strong, or try that route, or go do that thing. And it's really just like the biggest honor to to do that for someone else. Because it just, it makes you feel good. And then someone else gets to share that also. It's just the coolest thing. Yeah.
Planting seeds of possibility, like even just bringing 2 million feet of elevation into my awareness is like getting my mind thinking of something that's possible, right? Like it doesn't have to be that, but it's just, there's possibilities out there. So continue to do what you're doing, continue to lead off the front, continue to inspire others, even if it's not bringing in the money, like it's bringing in the curiosity and the dreaming and the imagination. And that's more, fruitful than any, you know, paycheck that you can get. At least that's what I believe. So you gotta keep going.
Yeah. That was kind of a conversation I had with myself at the beginning, kind of like in that first month or two of this year, when I said, like, should I pursue asking for, you know, any sponsorships? Because it costs money to do a lot of I'm, you know, just travel and driving to more trails and eating more food and recovery stuff. And I asked myself, if nobody says yes, if you don't end up getting any shoes or any money for any projects, are you still going to do it? And I was like, just to myself, of course I am. This is my dream and my goal, and I'm doing this for me. I'm going to pursue it relentlessly. Just, you know, even if nobody believes in it now, I will just work that much harder.
I love it. That's a beautiful place to wrap it up. Emily, thank you so much. I know I already mentioned your Instagram, but let's do it again. How do people follow you and get more of you and support you and be inspired by you as you get the other 1,400,000 feet of art this year?
It sounds so manageable. When you put totally. I am at Instagram's really just my home. Emily in dot the wild. So Emily in period the wild. And then I'm Emily Ketty on Facebook and on Strava. I'm there too. That's
oh cool. That's, oh yeah, we gotta follow her on Strava. Strava.
If it's not on Strava, it's not happening.
Thank you so much for being here. I reached out to a woman that I know who, and I told her that you were going to be on the show, that Jason, she had originally connected us with Jason, and that you were going to be on the show, and she was so excited. She just said that you were such a badass. So agree, Jody, she is a badass, and I can't wait for her to listen to this. I know she's going to love it. She's pursuing her first 100 mile. And I know training has been tough.
I love that. That's such an exciting time. That's awesome. Good luck, Jody, right?
Jody, yeah.
Yay! So cool.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Emily. This was such a pleasure, and I know our audience is going to love it. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.